Chapter 35. They left the lonely twin to her bitter, alien grief. Camilla and Harrow and Gideon stood together out in the hallway, reeling. Gideon was rotating her shoulder in its socket to make sure nothing had graunched out of place, and Harrowhark was flicking gobs of something unspeakable off her sleeves when Camilla said, "The warden? Where's the warden?" "I lost track of him during the fight," said Gideon. "I thought he was behind you." Harrow said, "He was, and I was by the door. I saw him only a few minutes ago." "I lost sight of him," Camilla said. "I never lose sight of him." "Slow your roll," said Gideon, with far more assurance than she actually felt. "He's a big boy. He's probably gone to make sure Dulcinea's okay. Harrow says I'm a weenie over Dulcinea." "You are," said Harrow, "a weenie over Dulcinea, but he's 600% weenier than I am, which I still don't get." Camilla looked at her and brushed her dark, slanted fringe out of her eyes. There was something in her gaze starker than impatience. "The warden," she said, "has been exchanging letters with Dulcinea Septimus for 12 years. He's been a weenie over her. One of the reasons he became the heir of the house was to meet her on even footing. His pursuit of medical science was entirely for her benefit." This turned all the fluids in Gideon's body to ice-cold piss.
She never mentioned him at all," she said stupidly.
"No," said Camilla.
"But she... I mean, I was spending so much time with her."
"Yes," said Camilla.
"Oh, God," said Gideon. "And he was so nice about it. Oh, my God, why the fuck did he not say anything? She and I weren't..."
"He asked her to marry him a year ago," said Camilla ruthlessly, some floodgate down now, "so that she could spend the rest of her time with someone who cared about her comfort. She refused, but not on the grounds that she didn't like him. And they weren't going to relax imperial rules about necromancers marrying out of house. The letters grew sparser after that, and when he arrived here, she'd moved on. He told me he was glad that she was spending time with someone who made her laugh." 5 people had died that day. It was weird how the small things ballooned out in importance comparatively. The tragedy saturated the stiffening bones and static hearts lying in state at Canaan House. But there was also deep tragedy in the flawed beams holding up their lives. An 8-year-old writing love letters to a terminally ill teenager. A girl falling in love with the beautiful stiff she'd been conceived solely to look after. A foundling chasing the approval of a house disappointed with her immunity to foundling killing gas. Gideon lay on the floor face down and became hysterical. Her necromancer was saying, "None of this makes any sense." "Nope," said Camilla heavily, "but it never has the whole time I've known them both."
"No," said Harrow. "I mean that Dulcinea Septimus twice spoke of Palamedes Sextus to me as a stranger. She told me that she didn't know him well at all, after he had turned down her offer for the siphoning challenge."
Gideon, face down on the dusty ground, moaned,
"I want to die."
She was nudged with a foot, not unkindly.
"Get up, Griddle."
"Why was I born so attractive?"
"Because everyone would have throttled you within the first 5 minutes otherwise," said her necromancer. Her attention was on Camilla. "Yet, why her about-face, if it's all how you say it was? I still don't understand."
"If I did," said the 6th Cavalier restlessly, "my quality of life, my sleep, and my sense of well-being would improve."
9th, get up. He doesn't hate you. You didn't ruin anything. He and she were always more complicated than that. He never even met her in person until he came here."
Gideon emerged from her prone position and sprang to her feet. Her heart was a dry cinder, but it still seemed ridiculously important that Palamedes Sextus be okay with her.
that at the end of this whole world, right before their divine intervention, all the little muddles of their personal lives be sorted out.
I've got to catch up with him, she said. Please give me a couple of minutes alone. Harrow, go get my two-hander. It's in the false bottom of my trunk.
Your what? Said Harrow, affrighted.
Cam, please, do me a massive solid here and keep an eye on her. I'm sorry I'm a home wrecker.
Gideon turned and sprinted away. She heard Harrow yell, Nav! But paid her no attention. Her rapier swung awkwardly into her hip, and her arm twinged in its socket, and her neck still felt weird. But all she could do was run as hard and as fast as she could to the place where she knew she'd find her last two living allies, the sick room where Dulcinea Septimus lay dying. She found the warden standing at the midpoint along the long corridor, staring at the shut door to her room. The hem of his grey robe whispered on the ground, and he seemed lost in thought. Gideon took a breath, which alerted him to her presence. He took off his glasses, wiped the lens with his sleeve, and looked back at her as he perched them back on his long nose. It seemed as though they looked at each other for such a long time. She took a step forward and opened her mouth to say, Sextus, I'm sorry. He folded his fingers together as you would a piece of paper. Her body stopped where it stood, as though steel needles had pierced her hands and her legs. Gideon felt cold all over. She tried to speak, but her tongue cleaved to the roof of her mouth and she tasted blood. She struggled, an insect pinned to its backing, and he looked at her, cold and dispassionate, unlike himself. Palamedes surveyed his work, and he saw that it was good. Then he opened Dulcinea's door. Gideon tried to flail against her invisible bonds, but her bones felt rigid in her body, like she was just the meat sock around them. Her heart struggled against her inflexible ribcage, her terror rising in her mouth. He smiled, and with that strange alchemy, he was made lovely. His grey eyes bright and clear. Palamedes entered the sick room. He did not shut the door. There were soft noises within. Then she heard his voice distinctly. I wish I had talked to you right at the start. Dulcinea's voice was quiet but audible.
Why didn't you?
I was afraid, he said frankly. I was stupid. My heart was broken, you see, so it was easier to believe that things had simply changed between us, that Dulcinea Septimus had been trying to spare my feelings, coddling an ignorant child who had tried to save her from something she understood far better than I ever could. I cared about her, and Camilla cared about us. I thought Dulcinea was saving us both the heartache of watching her fail and die during our task. There was silence in the room. He added, When this started, I was 8, and you, Dulcinea, were 15. My feelings were intense, but for God's sake, of course I understood. I was an infant, and yet I was shown endless tact and sympathy. My feelings were always taken as deadly serious, and I was treated as someone who knew what he was talking about. Does that run in the 7th house? Gideon could hear the faint smile in Dulcinea's voice.
I suppose it does. They have been letting young necromancers die for a very, very long time. When you grow up awfully ill, you're used to everyone making those decisions for you and hating it. So you do tend to want to take everyone's feelings as seriously as yours aren't,
Palamedes said. There are two things I want to know.
You can have more than two if you want. I've got all day.
I don't need more than two, he said calmly. The first is, why the fifth? There was a puzzled pause.
The fifth?
The 9th and 8th houses posed the most clear and present danger, he said. The 9th due to Harrow's sheer ability, the 8th due to how easily they could have outed you. Any slip would have shown an eighth necromancer that you weren't what you claimed. He would only have had to siphon you to know. I even wonder why I'm still walking around, if you don't find that arrogant. But it was the fifth house that scared you. Don't lie to me, please. Dulcinea said,
I have never lied to any of you.
Then why?
A tiny fluttering sigh, like a butterfly coming to rest. Gideon heard her say,
Well, think about it. Abigail Pent was a mature speaker to the dead. That's no good. It's not insurmountable, but it's a problem. But while that was a factor, it wasn't the reason. That was her hobby.
Hobby?
I didn't think anybody would care about the distant past. But Pent had an unwholesome interest in history. She was interested in all the old things she was finding in the library, in the rooms, letters, notes, pictures, the archaeology of a human life.
Abigail Pent may have been a necromancer, but she was also a historian, a famous one, I might add. You didn't do your research.
Oh, I've been kicking myself, believe me. I should have gone and swept the whole place first thing, but I was nostalgic.
I see.
Gosh, I'm glad you didn't. I didn't comprehend your mastery of the ghost within the thing, sixth psychometry.
There was a sudden tinkling laugh.
I think you ought to be really glad I didn't comprehend that. Pent, by herself, gave me such a fright.
And you put the key inside her.
Why? Time, said Dulcinea. I couldn't afford anybody catching me with it. Hiding it in her flesh obscured its traces. I thought you'd find it earlier, honestly. But it gave me time to gum up the lock. Who got rid of that? I thought I'd made it absolutely unusable.
That was the ninth.
That's more than impressive, she said. The Emperor would love to get hold of her. Thank goodness he never will. Well, that's another blow to my ego. If I'd thought the lock could have been broken and the key found, I would have cleaned out the place. I wouldn't have left it to be found. But that's why we're having this conversation now, aren't we? You used your psychometric tricks on the message. If you hadn't gone in there, you never would have known that I'd been in there too. Am I right?
Maybe, said Palamedes. Maybe.
What's your second question?
Gideon struggled again, but she was caught as fast as if the very air around her were glue. Her eyes were streaming from her total inability to blink. She could breathe, and she could listen, and that was it. Her brain was full of sweet fuck all. Palamedes said, very quietly,
Where is she? There was no answer. He said, I repeat, where is she?
I thought she and I had come to an understanding, Dulcinea admitted easily. If she had only told me about you, I could have taken some additional precautions.
Tell me what you have done, said Palamedes, with Dulcinea Septimus.
Oh, she's still here, said the person who wasn't Dulcinea Septimus dismissively. She came at the Emperor's call, cavalier in tow. What happened to him was an accident. When I boarded her ship, he refused to hear a word of reason, and I had to kill him, which didn't have to happen. Not like that, anyway. Then she and I talked. We are very much alike. I don't mean just in appearance, though that was the case, except in the eyes, as the seventh house is awfully predictable for looks, but our illness. She was very ill, as ill as I was when I first came here. She might have lived out the first few weeks she was here, Sextus, or she mightn't have, he said.
Then that story about Protesilaus and the seventh house was a lie.
You're not listening. I never lied, said the voice. I said that it was a hypothetical, and you all agreed.
Semantics.
You should have listened more closely. But I never, ever lied. I am from the seventh house, and it was an accident. Anyway, she and I talked. She was a sweet little thing. I really had wanted to do something for her, and afterward, I kept her for the longest time, until someone took out my cavalier. Then I had to get rid of her, quickly. The furnace was the only option. Don't look at me like that. I'm not a monster. Septimus was dead before the shuttle landed at Canaan. She hardly suffered.
There was a very long pause. Palamedes' voice betrayed nothing when he said, "Well, that's something at least. I suppose we're all to follow now."
"Yes, but this wasn't really about any of you," said the woman in the room with him. "Not personally. I knew that if I ruined his lictor plans, killed the heirs and cavaliers to all the other eight houses, I'd draw him back to the system. But I had to do it in a subtle enough way that he wouldn't bring the remaining hands with him. If I had arrived in full force, he'd have turned up on a war footing and sent the lictors to do all the dirty work, like always. This way, he's lulled into a false sense of semi-security, I suppose. And he won't even bother coming within Dominicus's domain. He'll sit out there beyond the system, trying to find out what's happening, right where I need him to be. I'll give the King Undying, the Necrolord Prime, the Resurrector, my Lord and Master, front row seats as I shatter his houses one by one and find out how many of them it takes before he breaks and crosses over, before he sees what will come when I call. And then I won't have to do anything. It will be too late."
A pause. "Why would one of the Emperor's lictors hate him?"
"Hate him?"
The voice of the girl whom Gideon had known as Dulcinea rose high and intent.
"Hate him? I have loved that man for 10,000 years. We all loved him, every one of us. We worshipped him like a king, like a god, like a brother."
Her voice dropped, and she sounded very normal and very old.
"I don't know why I'm telling you this, you who have been alive for less than a heartbeat, when I have lived past the time when life loses meaning. Thank your lucky stars that none of you became lictor, Palamedes Sextus. It is neither life nor death. It is something in between, and nobody should ever ask you to embrace it. Not even him. Especially not him."
"I wouldn't have done that to Camilla."
"So you know how it happens. Clever boy. I knew you'd all work it out, eventually. I didn't want to do it either. I didn't want to do it at all. But I was dying. Loveday, she was my cavalier. She and I thought it could make me live. Instead, I've just kept dying all this time." "No, you wouldn't have done it, and you're smart not to. You can't do that to somebody's soul. Teacher was nearly demented. Did you know what we did to him?" "I say we, but he wasn't my project. He was a holy terror. Blame your own house for that. I can't be grateful enough to those second ninnies for killing him and calling for help. He was the only one here who scared me. He couldn't have stopped me, but he might have made things stupid."
"Why did Teacher not recognize you?"
"Perhaps he did," said the woman. It sounded like she was smiling. Who knows what that soul Melange was ever thinking?
There was another pause. She said,
"You've taken this much more sensibly than I thought you would.
When you're young, you do everything the moment you think about it. For example, I've been thinking about doing this for the last 300 years, but I assumed you would try something silly when you realized she was dead.
I wouldn't ever try to do something silly, Palamedes said lightly. I made the decision to kill you the moment I knew there was no more chance to save her. That's all.
She laughed, as clear and as bright as ice. It was arrested midway through by a cough, a deep, sick-sounding cough. But she laughed through it anyway, as though she didn't care.
Oh, don't. Don't.
I just had to buy enough time, he said, to do it slowly enough that you wouldn't notice, to keep you talking. There was another laugh, but this one was punctuated by a big wet cough, too. No laughter followed. She said,
Young warden of the sixth house, what have you done?
Tied the noose, said Palamedes Sextus. You gave me the rope. You have severe blood cancer, just as Dulcinea did, advanced as hers was when she died. Static, because the lictor process begins radical cell renewal at the point of absorption. All this time we've been talking, I've been taking stock of everything that's wrong with you. Your bacterial lung infection, the neoplasms in your skeletal structure, and I've pushed them along. You've been in a terrific amount of pain for the last myriad. I hope that pain is nothing to what your own body's about to do to you, lictor. You're going to die spewing your own lungs out of your nostrils, having failed at the finish line because you couldn't help but prattle about why you killed innocent people, as though your reasons were interesting. This is for the fifth and the fourth, for everyone who's died, directly or indirectly, due to you. And, most personally, this is for Dulcinea Septimus. The coughing didn't stop. Not Dulcinea sounded impressed, but not particularly worried.
Oh, it's going to take a great deal more than that. You know what I am, and you know what I can do.
Yes, said Palamedes. I also know you must have studied radical thanagetic fission, so you know what happens when a necromancer disperses their entire reserve of thanagy very, very quickly.
What?
Said the woman. He raised his voice.
Gideon, he called out. Tell Camilla.
He stopped.
Ah, never mind. She knows what to do.
The sick room exploded into white fire, and the bonds pinning Gideon snapped. She fell hard against the wall and spun, drunkenly, lurching back down the corridor as Palamedes Sextus made everything burn. There was no heat, but Gideon sprinted away from that cold white death without bothering to spare a glance behind as though flames were licking at her heels. There was another enormous crack and a boom! The ceiling shook wide showers of plaster dust down on her head as she threw herself bodily through a doorway. She ran for her life down the long corridors, past ancient portraits and crumbling statues, the grave goods of the tomb of Canaan House, the mechanisms of this feeble, shitty machine crumbling as Palamedes Sextus became a god-killing star. Gideon fell to her knees in the atrium before the dried-up fountain with its dried-up skeleton and his soggy towels. She put her forehead to the lip of the fountain's marble and pressed a dent into herself, still listening to the muffled sounds of destruction behind her. She pressed as though sheer surface contact alone would allow her to get off the ride. How long she did that for, how hard she pressed, and how long she huddled, she did not know. Her mouth was tight with wanting to cry, but her eyes were dry as salt. Years later, lifetimes later, there was movement at the entrance of the atrium she had flung herself through. Gideon turned her head. White steam poured from the hole. Within the steam stood a woman, her fawn-coloured curls sadly sizzled to nothing, her deep blue eyes like electromagnetic radiation.
Huge wounds exposed her bones and the bright pink meat inside her arms and her neck and her legs, and those wounds were sewing themselves up even as Gideon watched. She had wrapped herself in the bloodied white sheet that had covered her sickbed, and she was standing upright as though it was the easiest thing in the world. Her face was old, lineless and old, older than the rot of the whole of Canaan. The woman Gideon had kind of had the hots for held a gleaming rapier. She was barefoot. She leaned in the smoking doorway and turned away, and she began to cough. She spasmed, retched, clung to the frame for support. With a great asphyxiating bellow, she vomited what looked like most of a lung, studded all over with malformed bronchi with wobbling purple barbs and whole fingernails, onto the ground in front of them. It went splat. She groaned, closed those terrible blue eyes and pushed herself to stand. Blood dripped down her chin. She opened her eyes again. "My name is Kithareah the First," she said, "Lictor of the Great Resurrection, the seventh saint to serve the King Undying. I am a necromancer and I am a cavalier. I am the vengeance of the 10 billion. I have come back home to kill the Emperor and burn his houses. And Gideon the Ninth." She walked toward Gideon, and she raised her sword. She smiled. "This begins with you."